Hi, you're listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona with the Arizona Daily Sun for Thursday, October 16, 2025. I'm Flagstaff volunteer reader Lisa Cantor-Ganey, and today our front page articles include New Report Shows Rise of Absenteeism, Powerful Messages Abound, Museum Club Contents Scheduled for Auction, and North Pole Experience Staying Home for Now. And we are going to start at, we're going to start with the article that is titled Museum Club Contents Scheduled for Auction on November 8th. And this is written by Cody Bashore, digital editor. With the property listed for sale in June and the business itself listed for sale this past September, the Museum Club's future along Route 66 had been in question in recent months. The Stuber Auction Company in Flagstaff on Monday announced the contents of the Museum Club's location at 3404 East Route 66 would be auctioned off on November 8th, with previews scheduled for 8 a.m., followed by the auction itself at 10 a.m. Among the items within the business are animal mounts, beer signs, photos of past artists performing at the location, custom-made tables, and many other items from the business, such as the guitar sign in the front. Additionally, two signed contracts by Willie Nelson from the 1960s and a scale model of the original taxidermy log building are available as part of the auction. The Museum Club is still open for business through the end of October, according to the Post. The expectation is that it will change locations while the building, which is listed on the National Register of Historic Places, is to remain in place. In September, the business's Facebook page posted that the Museum Club's business can control the property for another 7 years, according to the lease with the property owner, while adding that the business had been listed for sale. The Post also explained that the business, currently owned by Zookeeper LLC, and the property, currently in a trust in the name of Martin and Stacy Zanzuki, are not directly connected. The property's listing by Da Vinci Realty, which was set at $2.3 million for the 1.42-acre parcel, previously referenced that the current tenant has expressed a willingness to vacate upon sale, though that language has since been removed from the posting. Potential uses for a buyer listed a restaurant, bar, event space, brewery, or entertainment venue, as it is ideal for owner, user, or savvy investor. In September 2017, the museum closed for the first time since it was built in 1931 as a taxidermy museum, shop, and trading post. After reopening in December 2017, the business closed again in March 2020 due to the COVID-19 pandemic, reopening and closing once more during the following year. Ultimately, the Museum Club returned again in March 2021 under its current ownership, a local company called the Zookeepers, which was formed by local residents to purchase the club, according to Mike Thompson. More details on the auction can be found at the Stuber Auction Company's Facebook page. And one thing they neglected to mention is that local residents used to call the museum club the zoo. That's why the company is called the Zookeepers. That title of that article was Museum Club's Contents Scheduled for Auction on November 8th. And that was written by Cody Bashore, digital editor. Our next front page article is called City of Flagstaff Honors Indigenous Peoples Day. And this is written by Sam McLaughlin, Sun staff reporter. The City of Flagstaff celebrated Indigenous Peoples Day this year with an event emphasizing Native Americans' leadership and entrepreneurship. Held at the Elks Lodge on Monday, October 13th, the event featured a keynote speech by Doreen Garland, the Vice Mayor of Tempe and a member of the Navajo Nation. "I don't want my grandchildren or any Indigenous child to carry the weight of imposter syndrome," Garland said in her speech. "I want them to walk boldly in their identity, knowing their roots are deep and their voices are powerful." She stressed the importance of Native American representation from the local level up to Congress. "There are 535 members of Congress. Four are Native American. Four voices representing 574 federally recognized tribes and millions of Indigenous people," Garland said. "If Native Americans represent 3.4% of the population, there should be at least 19 Native American members of Congress, not four. That gap matters, because when we are not at the table, our issues are not fully understood and our stories are not fully told." Garland noted the example of Deb Haaland, the Secretary of the Interior under former President Joe Biden and the first Native American cabinet member in U.S. history. Haaland's voice within the administration was instrumental to achieving greater tribal co-management of federal lands, Garland said, including the establishment of Ba'aj Navajo Ita Kupini Ancestral Footprints of the Grand Canyon National Monument in northern Coconino County. Out of a job after President Donald Trump's inauguration in January, Haaland, who is a member of the Laguna Pueblo and a former congressional representative, announced she will run for governor of New Mexico in 2026. "If you ever thought, maybe I should step up, maybe I should lead, hear me clearly, we need you, now," Garland urged listeners. Among the crowd seated at the lodge's tables were Flagstaff Mayor Becky Daggett, Vice Mayor Miranda Sweet, and Councilmember Lori Matthews, who is Flagstaff City Council's liaison to the city's Indigenous Commission. Also in attendance were Flagstaff Police Chief Sean Connolly, Coconino County Attorney Ammon Barker, and recently appointed Superior Court Judge Charles Dowdy, formerly an attorney for the nonprofit DNA People's Legal Services. County Supervisor Geronimo Vasquez provided coffee for the morning. The event continued with a presentation by the reigning Miss Hopi, LaDonna Jacket, and Miss Hopi First Attendant, Carissa Ben. Their platform, Jacket told the crowd, is strengthening our future through Hopi lava'i, Hopi language, and cultural knowledge. Where would we be without our language? Ben said. In Hopi, it's been told to us, once we lose our language, we lose our culture. Reflecting the importance of language preservation and revitalization to Native American identity and culture, many of the day's speakers and presenters made their introductions in Diné, Navajo, Hopi, or other indigenous languages, followed by English. For an acknowledgement of youth leadership, Jacket and Ben were joined at the front of the room by the indigenous ambassadors and co-ambassadors of two local high schools, Louvel Lomahoyuma and Adriana Begay represented Flagstaff High School, and Nalis Lomakua and Dylan Nasingotua represented Coconino High School. Turning to entrepreneurship, the event featured a panel discussion with Jalen Whitethorn, a contemporary abstract artist, Sheldon Yazzie, owner of the financial advisory firm AccuStrat Management Co., Meg Kabodi Adakai, who runs the Flagstaff Mountain Town Market, and Adrian Dotson, founder of the marketing and public relations firm Rainmaker Media Group. The panelists talked about the challenges and rewards of starting a business and some of the ways in which they felt their cultural upbringing influenced their approach. Whitethorn described himself as a Flagstaff local and credited his grandfather, Bahi Whitethorn Sr., for encouraging his artistic exploration and instilling the confidence that recently led him to take a trip to Austria with fellow artists Janet Yazzie and Ryan Smith. The more I paint, the more I travel, the more I venture across the Americas, and now European countries. It just really gives me that motivation, Whitethorn said. Sharing stories of his childhood with curious strangers in Austria, he added, invigorated his sense of pride in being Navajo. Yazzie was raised in Kayenta on the Navajo Nation and said his view of financial management draws heavily upon lessons learned from his grandparents. Our ancestors knew that they had to be stewards of their resources, he explained. Judicious stewardship of those resources was key to multi-generational sustainability, and he now strives to help his clients manage their finances in a similar way. We have so much financial resources out there, but very limited financial education, Yazzie said. Dotson, a graduate of Coconino High School, said his mother set an example for him as she operated an environmental consulting business in Flagstaff for over 30 years. Running his own business, he noted, gives him more flexibility to make time for family. I think as Native Americans, we always have the obligation to our families, Dotson said. Being his own boss allows him to prioritize his family, from participating in Navajo ceremonies to creating opportunities for relatives. Kabodi Adake acknowledged how balancing economic sustainability and cultural integrity is an ongoing challenge. I'm still working on it, she said, joking that she should take one of Yazzie's business cards for some advice. But citing the natural symbiosis of the three sisters, corn, beans, and squash, cultivated by her Hopi ancestors and other indigenous groups. As an example, she said collaboration was at the heart of her efforts. The market wouldn't be possible without a community, she said. Rafael Tapia, the director of Tribal Community Connections for Local First Arizona, spoke after the panelists, linking the challenges faced by Native entrepreneurs to the long history of colonization in the Americas. Over hundreds of years, Tapia said, our resources have been sequestered, appropriated. Our communities are banking deserts, financial deserts. But yet there's something amazing happening, he continued. Even though the system is not designed for us, the system does not equip us with having the resources that we need to thrive and prosper. We're doing it anyway. He encouraged prospective entrepreneurs to take advantage of the organization's character-based lending, a program intended to improve access to capital for Arizona's Native American tribes. Keep up the good work. Keep fighting the good fight, Tapia said. And let's go back to the top. And that article was called City of Flagstaff Honors Indigenous Peoples Day. And this was written by Sam McLaughlin, Sun Staff reporter. Now we'll move along to our third front page article today. This article is titled, New Report Shows Rise of Absenteeism. And this is written by Jessel Ortigon, Sun Staff reporter. Chronic absenteeism has profoundly affected educational spaces in Arizona, particularly among high school students. This issue impacts academic performance, the quality of the classroom environment, and leaves long-term impacts on students that follow into higher education and adulthood. For a student to be considered chronically absent, they need to have missed 10% or more of the school year. A typical school year is 180 days, so missing 18 or more days of school would define chronic absenteeism. According to a September 2025 research brief conducted by the Helios Foundation, or Helios Education Foundation, the statewide chronic absenteeism rate among high school students is 34% as of the 2023-24 school year. Wow. Over the past few years, the Helios Education Foundation has been looking into chronic absenteeism, at first in K-12 education, and more recently at the high school level, as a result of concerns about dropout rates. We started digging in more recently to the high school because you start thinking of those students, said Paul Perrault, Senior Vice President of Community Impact and Learning for Helios. If they're missing lots of school and they're not doing well on their academic courses, they're more likely to drop out. They're more likely not to go to college. So we're thinking about those opportunities for workforce and careers after. And that's why we wanted to make sure we really looked into high school as well. And what we found is that those students are not at school a lot. When the foundation looked into reasons why these rates were increasing, they found a few contributors. One was that students got used to not attending school after the pandemic because it became more accessible to miss school and catch up online later. In the research brief, it was found that in the 2020 to 21 school year, chronic absenteeism rates climbed to 35% and peaked at 42% in 2021 to 22. The current rate of 34% is still 10 percentage points above pre-pandemic levels. Transportation also continues to be an issue for some families because some districts across the state have ended their bus routes entirely. Rural schools have been particularly affected by the barrier of lack of transportation. Additionally, there are students that are relied upon in their household to be a caretaker for younger siblings or have to work to support and help their families. You start looking at all those factors together and see this collage of different reasons why students aren't in school, Perrault said. That's why it's so important to talk about. Because if we want those students to have more of an opportunity, we need them back in school. In a newsletter released by Helios September 30th, a key finding about the impacts of chronic absenteeism on academic performance was students with lower proficiency in English language arts and mathematics are more likely to be chronically absent. Furthermore, nearly half of 11th grade students scoring minimally proficient in either subject were chronically absent in 2023 to 24. Perrault said chronic absenteeism doesn't just impact students' academic performance, but also the performance of the classroom environment. If you're a teacher and you have students missing school all the time, at different points of the day, at different points of the week, then you have to work triply, Perrault said. You have to work hard to make sure that you're helping students make up that work, understanding that work, paying attention to students who are missing a lot of school. It really takes away from the teacher being able to teach the class as much because they're getting students caught up, and that's definitely an issue. He also brought attention to the implications with funding for schools when students are dropped from enrollment for missing too much. If schools start seeing lower enrollment, there could be a decrease in provided funding. Helios has four key recommendations for schools trying to address chronic absenteeism. Number one is early high school intervention. This work starts with freshmen in high school and thinking about what support can be put in place, such as mentoring and personalized attendance monitoring, to prevent the disengagement that leads to chronic absenteeism. Number two is integrating attendance data using attendance tracking and academic intervention systems to identify and support at-risk students. These are key ways to ensure students are engaged and the interventions are aligned with the work. Number three is community partnerships. One of the points the Helios Education Foundation stresses is that chronic absenteeism isn't just a school-wide problem, but also a community problem as well. This recommendation insists that schools think of ways to partner with transportation partners, healthcare organizations, and social services to address barriers such as transportation and family instability. And finally, number four, is promoting an attendance culture. This focuses on how schools can shift the narrative from the idea of compliance to rewarding and fostering attendance, and what might lead to for and what it might lead to for ultimate success. Perrault also recommends that schools look at their data and really try to understand what chronic absenteeism looks like on their campus to better gauge how to work with families, students, and community organizations. Chronic absenteeism in the local sphere, according to reports from a Flagstaff Unified FUSD board meeting on September 9th, the district sits at about 20.8% in chronic absenteeism, and 13.4% of that can be attributed to the local high schools. FUSD's student population is about one-third white, one-third Hispanic, and one-third Native American. The chronic absenteeism rates for each group are 15.6% for Caucasian students, 20.5% among Hispanic students, and 25.7% for Native American students. One of the things to keep in mind with chronic absenteeism at the secondary level that is tricky is there is period reporting and there is daily reporting, said Mike Volger, okay, FUSD's Director of Research as Assessment and Data. Volger said the high schools take attendance on the basis of periods, so when daily attendance is sent to the state, it's reported in quarter-day increments. If a student misses a period, they're marked down for a 0.25 absence rather than for the whole day, and it adds up from there. If high schoolers were tracked based on the number of periods they miss, the absenteeism rate would be much higher, according to Volger, making it tricky to report accurately. If you look at high school data versus other grades, kids ditch and don't go to class, Volger said. So there's these unverified, unaccounted absences, and that's a big one. FUSD has worked with Helios Education Foundation in the past to find solutions to chronic absenteeism in the district. The foundation hosted a summit bringing together school leaders in Flagstaff to introduce some methods to combat this issue. One of those methods is family outreach. According to Volger, the district has been persistent about keeping track of students who are absent by calling parents or guardians to confirm that their child is missing from class or school. Though FUSD is trying to combat chronic absenteeism among its students, Volger recognizes there are certain situations that families can't control when their children have to miss school, and every parent has the right to pull their kids out of classes. However, he said FUSD is going to continue working with families and students to help them understand the impact of absenteeism and hopefully centralize school for more people. Making connections with the kids is really important, Volger said. Making connections with the parents is really important. That's been the other side of what we're really trying to emphasize with families and with our staff. We want this to be a place that is celebrated. Our district approach is very much aligned with creating an environment where families and kids are welcome, and that's probably been our best tool. And that front page article was called New Report Shows Rise of Absenteeism by Giselle Ortegon. And just a reminder that you're listening to the Arizona Daily Sun from the Flagstaff Studios of Sun Sounds of Arizona. Sun Sounds programming is directed to those who cannot use or hold print material due to a disability. Listen to our live streams and learn how you can support us at the website sunsounds.org. You can also get our stream and on-demand programs with the Sun Sounds of Arizona app for Apple and Android devices. And next, we're going to read the fourth front page article. This one is titled, The North Pole Experience, Staying Home for Now. And this is written by Cody Bashour, digital editor. What began as a desire by Scott Pace to offer his daughters the opportunity to visit Santa Claus at the North Pole for Christmas will soon welcome its 750,000th visitor this coming holiday season. When it returns November 21st, the North Pole Experience, NPX, will celebrate its 16th year of operations since originally debuting in Greer in 2009, and its 13th year at Fort Tuthill County Park in Flagstaff. In fact, the magic that brings NPX to life in Flagstaff has been underway for the past few weeks. The process began shortly after Picking in the Pines concluded. Greer was magical. It was a neat place, but we outgrew it, Pace said. We needed a bigger workshop, and they just didn't have the infrastructure that we needed. We ended up moving to the Flagstaff Mall in 2012. Looked for space, looked for buildings, and met the county, and that building just happened to be the perfect fit for where we were headed. Initially signed on for 15 years, NPX's agreement with Coconino County has seen multiple iterations over the years. At one point, it became a series of one-year contracts, some with the option to renew for an additional year. But the usage agreement for Fort Tuthill was recently extended long enough for NPX to reach its second decade of making dreams become a reality, not only for Pace's children, but for also hundreds of thousands more from all across the county, the country. Approved by the Coconino County Board of Supervisors in August, the agreement will keep Fort Tuthill as the home to the Toy Hall of Fame, Elf University, Santa's Mailroom, the Area 47 Sleigh Hangar, and most importantly, Santa's Workshop for the next 5 years. The county is aware, however, that this could be the final run for NPX in its current home, as it appears due for another upgrade to the space it utilizes. The North Pole Experience has been looking for a larger space that we can't, unfortunately, offer them. What we decided to do at this point is to do a 5-year to allow him that time to find space that he's truly looking for to expand this business, said Cynthia Namath, Coconino County's Parks and Recreation Director. Other options at Fort Tuthill have have been explored by the sides, but no appropriate space appears to allow for Pace's vision to come to fruition. Our goal right now is to take the experience to the next level. Part of that is we need more square footage, and we want to make the experience even more intimate for guests, where there's more space, more things to experience, Pace said. Adding how phenomenal the partnership has been with the county during Namath's tenure as director. We are looking to bring it to the next level, where 25 years from now, we'll be talking about the kids that are coming through now will start having children, and then they'll be bringing their children through. Should the NPX move away from Fort Tuthill, Pace plans to remain in the Flagstaff area, either by leasing another building or building his own. Pace admitted he had been courted by some pretty big resorts down in the valley with the possibility of bringing NPX to a larger convention resort, but said, where we are, where we've planted our feet, is where we want to be. Notably, Pace expressed immense appreciation for those who have brought the magic to life and supported Santa Claus's endeavors within the NPX in Flagstaff. Bringing on a little more than 250 high school and Northern Arizona University students each year, Pace said typically between 40% and 60% of the workers return each year. There's a lot of amazing young people in Flagstaff, and we don't pick everybody. We're pretty selective, Pace said. When people are really going to create a magical environment for our guests, some of these young people, it gives me great hope for the future. They really pour it out there, and they've got a hard work ethic. Looking back to NPX's beginnings in Greer, Pace said he never thought it would necessarily develop to the level it currently is at, which Namath called Disney quality, based on its incredibly elaborate setup, or where he intends to push it to next. Originally telling his twin daughters he would see if I can get a hold of Santa for next year, Pace was surprised to find that there were few, if any, authentic Christmas experiences. Pace explained that he simply wanted the experience to feel as though visitors were truly at the North Pole, so he utilized his background in toy manufacturing to develop one himself. It had to be the kind of deal where they would go through and feel like they were actually there, the suspension of disbelief, so to speak, Pace said. It had to be so authentic that even parents would go, wow, I've never seen anything like this. Though NPX's success speaks for itself, as ticket availability for many of the December weekend time slots have already been sold out for weeks, it has consistently delivered on adding new wrinkles to the experience annually in order to continue surprising guests while hoping it will become a long-standing family tradition for the years ahead. While Pace has utilized his creation to help protect childhood innocence along all generations during the holiday season, NPX has also helped Coconino County with improvements to Fort Tuthill within the partnership, in addition to the hundreds of thousands of visitors it has brought in over the years. What within the space NPX operates, it has added heat, fixed the plumbing, upgraded the concrete flooring, and built a storage facility as part of the agreement with the county. While NPX is authorized to use the space from mid-September to the end of March, Coconino County is able to rent out the space to private shows or events hosted at Fort Tuthill during the rest of the year. Additionally, the revenue generated has been extremely helpful, according to Namath. Currently, at a minimum of $300,000 or 8% of gross revenue, whichever is greater, the county has been able to use the money generated over the years to make improvements to Fort Tuthill. We try to focus on Fort Tuthill because that's where the funds are generated, and this is the largest park that has a lot of deferred maintenance. But we've been able to address a lot of that through this partnership and other public-private partnerships, Namath said. For example, the new paved parking lot is a result of dollars from NPX and our other partners. The new restroom that's near the bike park, that's a result of dollars from public-private partners. So the public definitely benefits from these private-public partnerships. Tickets for NPX can be found at northpoleexperience.com and begin at $58 per person. NPX begins on Friday, November 12th, and runs each weekend until December 21st. Weekdays are available beginning Wednesday, December 17th through Christmas Eve. And that article was titled North Pole Experience Staying Home for Now. And this was written by Cody Bashore, digital editor. So now we're finished with the front page, and we are going to move on to the local and Arizona page. And we'll start with an obituary for Joanne Lesko, 89, passed away peacefully on October 4th, 2025, in Flagstaff, Arizona. She was born on May 10th, 1936, in Los Angeles, California, the daughter of Anne and James Cummings. As a young lady, she worked in the coal mine boarding house that her mother ran. She did dishes and served food to over 100 coal miners. This is where she met her future husband, Proctor C. Lesko. She married Proctor in Green River, Wyoming, on April 24, 1955. And was blessed with four wonderful children. Proctor became an FBI agent, and they were transferred to Portland and then to Flagstaff, where they raised their children. Joanne became involved with the Catholic Church, where she enjoyed singing, and became the choir director at St. Pius X for 30 years. She also joined the Sweet Adeline's a cappella group, where she made so many friends. Joanne learned to sew and was a great seamstress and enjoyed making dresses for the girls and suits for the boys. For homecoming and proms. She also enjoyed bowling and even taught her grandson, Tori, how to bowl. She was very excited about that. Joanne also enjoyed traveling and camping with Proctor and her four children, often going to the White Mountains, Colorado, and Utah. In later years, she enjoyed taking her grandsons, Tori and Dustin, to Bryan Head Ski Resort. Joanne also ran a typing business in Flagstaff for many years and really enjoyed doing dissertations. During this time, she introduced the very first word processing system IBM computer to Flagstaff, Arizona. She also did transcribing for many businesses. Sounds funny, but she loved it. She never turned a job away. She is preceded in death by her mother, Anne Cummings, father, James Cummings, brother, Billy Cummings, brother-in-law, Mike Lesko, and son, Mark Lesko. Joanne is survived by her husband, Proctor Lesko, daughters, Barbara Thompson, with Greg Donovan, Deborah Klotz, with John Klotz, son Martin Lesko with Sandra Lesko, and her grandchildren, Danae Kokal with Jarvel Kokal, Dustin Lesko with Lauren Moyer, Tori Thompson, Megan Harris with Ron Harris, Blake Lesko with Alyssa Lesko, six great-grandchildren and many nieces and nephews. Church services will be held at St. Francis de Assis Catholic Church on Wednesday, October 15, 2025. Rosary recited at 10 a.m. with Mass following at 10:30 a.m. Condolences may be shared with the family at NorvalOwensMortuary.com. Next on this page, we have a news brief. It's called Northern Arizona University Researchers Launching Statewide Data Collection Competition for Arizona Students, and this is written by Daily Sun staff. A research team at Northern Arizona University is launching a competition for Arizona's middle and high school students to assist with data collection around vehicle pollution. The competition is intended to give students experience in using technical tools in a real-world environment, as well as encourage as much data collection as possible. It will recognize the student and school earning the most points on the Hestia traffic app between October 20th and November 21st. All Arizona students in grades 6 through 12 are eligible to compete in the individual category, and school staff and parents can earn points toward the school's total. Kevin Gurney and members of the Gurney Lab in the School of Informatics, Computing, and Cyber Systems created a mobile app called Hestia Traffic. Hestia Traffic has both manual and AI-enabled versions and is used to collect information about the size and distribution of vehicles on Arizona's roads. Existing information about vehicles on roads was simply too coarse for the type of modeling we are doing, said lead scientist Helen Rowe, who is an associate professor in NAU's School of Earth and Sustainability. The traffic app provides information at the scale of individual roadways where people experience pollution and extreme heat. The team has finished beta testing the app and is now seeking students' help with data collection. We've created a new curriculum to inspire the next generation of community scientists, said Edgar Ochoa, sixth grade teacher at Ed and Verma Pastor Elementary School in Phoenix, who is leading the competition. This curriculum will inspire the next generation to engage and participate in science, collecting data that improves our understanding of natural and built environments. This effort is part of the Southwest Urban Integrated Field Laboratory from the U.S. Department of Energy, which is an initiative to address heat, air pollution, and climate change in Arizona's cities. All three of Arizona's public universities are among the participants. Schools interested in participating should contact Edgar Ochoa at edgar.ochoa@rsd.edu. www.k12.az. And that article was titled, Researchers Launching Statewide Data Collection Competition by Daily Sun Staff. And our next article on this page is under the heading of Community Health Matters. And the title is October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. And this is written by Northern Arizona Healthcare. Every October, people around the world unite to recognize Breast Cancer Awareness Month, a time dedicated to raising awareness, supporting those affected, and promoting education about one of the most common cancers among women. This annual observance serves as a reminder of how vital continued attention remains in the fight against breast cancer. Northern Arizona Healthcare, NAH, knows how important it is to provide breast care information to support the community in making the best choices for their breast health. According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, breast cancer is the second most common cancer in women, just behind lung cancer. That's why early detection and screening are keys to saving lives. Breast Cancer Awareness Month is intended to educate the public about this disease. And the first step in taking care of one's health is through preventative measures. The Cancer Centers of NAH recommends that women aged 40 and older have an annual mammogram and continue to do so at the advice of their physician. Early detection with mammography identifies tumors when they are very small, which increases survival rates and allows for less invasive treatment options. Women who have dense breast tissue may also need ultrasound or MRI imaging to better screen for breast cancer. NAH also reminds women to perform monthly self-breast exams with the best time during the week after a menstrual period when hormone levels are lower and breasts are less tender, which makes lumps easier to detect. It is recommended for postmenopausal women to choose a consistent day each month. It's important for women to take control of their breast cancer risk by learning what lifestyle changes can help reduce that risk and overall health and improve overall health. The American Cancer Society suggests these steps to help you stay well and lower your breast cancer risk. Be mindful of healthy eating. Pay attention to foods you eat daily and adding various colors to your food. Phytonutrients from colors provide health benefits such as antioxidant and anti-inflammatory effects that can lower the risk of cancer. Get to and stay at a healthy weight. Being overweight or obese is linked to an increased risk of breast cancer. So choose a lifestyle that will help you get to and stay at a healthy weight. Be physically active. Many studies have shown that moderate to vigorous physical activity is linked with lower breast cancer risk. So it's important to get regular physical activity. It is recommended you maintain consistency, go slow, and increase the level of exercise gradually, making sure to pay attention on how much your body can tolerate. Limit alcohol consumption. Alcohol increases the risk of breast cancer. It is best to not drink alcohol at all. But for women who do drink, they should have no more than one alcoholic drink a day. A drink is 12 ounces of beer, 5 ounces of wine, or 1.5 ounces of 80-proof distilled spirits or hard liquor. The breast cancer program at the Cancer Centers of NAH is a cooperative program between the cancer patient and the team of breast cancer specialists working together toward optimal treatment outcomes and survival rates. Services provided through our breast health program include individual treatment planning and coordination among all involved healthcare providers. At NAH, we use personalized treatment plans based on a patient's tumor biology to neutralize cancers. This greater understanding of tumors allows us to perform less invasive surgeries, need less toxic chemotherapy agents, and minimize radiation with focused beams. NAH's nurse navigators also provide expert, compassionate support to guide patients through their complex treatment plans. Genetic testing is available for all patients at high risk with a personal history of breast cancer to help determine a treatment plan to prevent developing breast cancer. NAH partners with Cancer Support Community Arizona, which has a strong network of cancer support groups that can be helpful for patients navigating through a cancer diagnosis. Breast Cancer Awareness Month has consistently shown that awareness can save lives. By encouraging open conversations, promoting regular screenings, and supporting research, society takes one step closer to a future where breast cancer can be prevented. People can learn more about the services provided through the NAH Breast Health Program at the Cancer Centers of NAH by visiting www.nahealth.com/breast-health-program. And that article was called October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month in the Community Health Matters section. And that's all the time we have for the Arizona Daily Sun. For Sun Sounds of Arizona in Flagstaff, I'm volunteer reader Lisa Cantor-Ganey. Thanks for listening.